cardiac health during the pandemic and always. There's some discouraging news right now in the battle against heart disease. A new report out of UCSF shows that heart surgeries are down 53% during the pandemic and that more heart surgery patients are dying as a result. And the American Heart Association recently did a study that showed younger women are far less aware of heart disease risks than earlier generations. Still, heart disease remains the number one killer in the U.S. About one in four Americans will die of heart disease. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, Heart Health. We'll go over some of the important signs, symptoms, and preventive measures. And we'll find out about new findings in cardiovascular research. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news.
Thanks.
Cardiac health during the pandemic and always. There's some discouraging news right now in the battle against heart disease. A new report out of UCSF shows that heart surgeries are down 53% during the pandemic and that more heart surgery patients are dying as a result. And the American Heart Association recently did a study that showed younger women are far less aware of heart disease risks than earlier generations. Still, heart disease remains the number one killer in the U.S. About one in four Americans will die of heart disease. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, Heart Health. We'll go over some of the important signs, symptoms, and preventive measures. And we'll find out about new findings in cardiovascular research. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news.
Live from NPR News, I'm Corva Coleman. Senate Democrats are advancing President Biden's nearly $2 trillion coronavirus relief package. They may use a Senate process to force it through, even though Republicans object. Senate Democratic Leader Chuck Schumer says quick action is needed.
We must not repeat the mistakes of the past and do too little, too reluctantly, and too late. We will not repeat the mistakes of the past. Our goal is simple. To help the American people and the American economy and do it fast.
Republicans point out President Biden said he wanted to move forward in a bipartisan way, and they say this is overreaching. Senate Republicans on the Judiciary Committee have rejected requests to set a confirmation hearing next week for Attorney General nominee Merrick Garland. NPR's Windsor Johnston has more.
Incoming Judiciary Committee Chairman Dick Durbin tells MSNBC that delaying Merrick Garland's confirmation vote further jeopardizes national security.
The uncertainty of domestic terrorism and what we witnessed right in this complex on January 6th, you would think that the Republicans would share our sense of urgency.
Judiciary Committee Chairman Lindsey Graham says Garland's confirmation hearing would conflict with the start of next week's impeachment trial of former President Trump. This isn't the first time Garland has faced a setback in the Senate. In 2016, Republicans refused to give him a hearing or a vote for his Supreme Court nomination. Windsor Johnston, NPR News.
Meanwhile, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer says Democrats and Republicans have reached agreement on power sharing. That means Democrats will soon chair Senate committees and control legislative action. The ashes of U.S. Capitol Police Officer Brian Sicknick are lying in honor in the U.S. Capitol Rotunda. Sicknick was killed during the violent attack on the Capitol by Trump supporters last month. The chaplain of the House, Margaret Grun Kibben, offered the invocation honoring the officer's service.
Send upon us your peace, which is beyond our understanding, but which allows us to believe that in Brian's sacrifice, we are given the courage to look for and safeguard its purpose so that it was not in vain.
Sicknick's ashes arrived at the rotunda last night. President Biden and First Lady Jill Biden have also paid their respects. The military junta in Myanmar has brought charges against de facto leader Aung San Suu Kyi. Michael Sullivan reports she was toppled 2 days ago in a coup and detained.
Illegally importing walkie-talkies, that's what she's charged with, police claim, after searching her home following Monday's coup. If convicted, she could face several years in prison. The charges, almost as pathetic as when her house arrest was extended in 2009, after an American man swam up to her lakeside house unannounced.
Michael Sullivan reporting. On Wall Street, the Dow was down 47 points. This is NPR News. The Supreme Court has canceled oral arguments on two Trump-era immigration cases. One was over funding for the border wall. The other involved requiring undocumented workers to remain in Mexico before coming to the U.S. The Biden administration sought postponement of the cases because it's reconsidering these policies. A federal judge is ordering COVID-19 vaccines be made available immediately to inmates at state prisons in Oregon. Conrad Wilson of Oregon Public Broadcasting reports.
U.S. Magistrate Judge Stacey Beckerman ruled in favor of a group of inmates who have criticized Oregon's response to the pandemic inside its prisons. Currently, the state's offering vaccines to high-risk groups that live in congregate care settings, but until now, it's not included inmates.
This is a potentially life-saving decision.
Juan Chavez is one of the civil rights attorneys representing the inmates.
I think what we've known from the beginning is that people in prison were going to be particularly vulnerable to this disease.
The judge's order comes as the Oregon Department of Corrections has struggled to manage the COVID-19 pandemic. More than 3,000 inmates have tested positive for the virus. Of those, at least 42 people in custody have died, including 20 just last month. For NPR News, I'm Conrad Wilson in Portland.
Investigators from the World Health Organization are in Wuhan, China. They're looking at the emergence of the pandemic. Today, members visited a virus research lab that's been at the center of conspiracy theories. They claim the coronavirus started there. Many scientists reject that theory, but they're calling on China to release details of all coronavirus samples that have been studied at that lab. I'm Corva Coleman, NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Jones Day, an integrated partnership collaboratively providing legal services for more than a century. 43 offices, 5 continents, serving clients as one firm worldwide. Learn more at jonesday.com.
Welcome to Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Cardiovascular disease is the number one cause of death in this country, but it is largely preventable. We will learn about the latest understanding of heart disease and what you can do to maintain good heart health, especially during the pandemic on this program. My guests are Mindy Beyer, chair of the Maine chapter of the American Heart Association, a nurse and a heart condition survivor. And Dr. Alan Jansiewicz is a non-invasive cardiologist with Northern Light Cardiology at Eastern Maine Medical Center. He is the medical director of Northern Light Cardiovascular Services. We invite your questions and comments. Email talk@mainepublic.org, tweet @MaineCalling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. 1-800-399-3566. That is a different phone number from the one to call for Maine Public's Community Impact Drive. So if you want to call into Maine Calling, 1-800-399-3566. We do have a technical problem right now. We're having a hard time getting a hold of our guests. So we are going to take a little break from Maine Calling until we can get that sorted out. We'll be back with you in just a few minutes.
Thanks, Jen. Mark Vogelsang here with Scott Marshallton, and we're asking you to make your pledge of support right now to Maine Public while we work out our technical details and technical repairs and fixes. But your pledge of support makes a huge difference for Maine Public this morning. As we're in the middle of this community impact pledge drive. And the great thing about this is when you call 1-800-866-1475, you can vote, if you will, to say thank you to Maine Calling for this program being here every single day and the amazing work that Jen Rooks and her team and the entire news department has been doing at Maine Public. 1-800-866-1475. I'm Mark Vogelsang, president of Maine Public, and along with Scott Marshallton, who's our vice president, head of development. Scott, you know, one of the things that we're doing this time round is helping families in need. You want to explain how that's working when people make a pledge of support to Maine Public?
I'd be pleased to. By calling 1-800-866-1475, Mark, or going online at Maine Public, every single donation to Maine Public Radio triggers a gift of 33 meals that's given from the Maine Community Foundation to the Good Shepherd Food Bank. So supporting Maine Public has an amazing ripple effect right now. Your gift will trigger 33 meals that will be given from the Maine Community Foundation, the Good Shepherd.
And there are a lot of families, as we talked about, Scott, that we're learning that there's food insecurity rampant across the state of Maine. And this is a problem for kids in school who don't have regular access to meals at lunch, but also families that are in need right now. So your donation of any amount to Maine Public right now, Maine Community Foundation is donating 33 meals to Good Shepherd Food Bank.
And you can do that by calling 1-800-866-1475. Again, 1-800-866-1475, and going online at mainepublic.org.
Scott, let me talk a little bit about Maine Calling. And, you know, Maine Public Radio and the role of a daily program like Maine Calling with Jen Rooks and the team provides connections to the heartbeat of Maine in a way that no one else simply does. The conversation today that we're going to have about heart disease, the conversation we've had in the past, our daily CDC briefings, this daily lineup of reporting, insightful conversations, deep dives into local issues make Maine Public Radio a vital part of this community. And when you make a pledge of support, whether that pledge is $5,000 or $500 or $50 monthly or one time, you are helping provide this powerful source of revenue that gives Maine Public the resources to serve you and the community. And here's the number to make that call, 1-800-866-1475.
Again, 1-800-866-1475, or online at mainepublic.org. Yep. Mark, it's been donor investment. People who have called in over the years supporting Maine Public Radio, and specifically supporting Maine Calling. Maine Calling has been a show. It's been, 9 years now, 8 years at Maine Public?
And yeah, at least 9+ years. Yep.
Two days a week to 3 days a week to 4 days a week, and now 5 days a week. And during the initial part of the pandemic, when news was necessary even more then than now, given we just didn't know what was happening, what was going on. And they extended the show for two hours a day. Right.
You know, Scott,
very quickly, and it's their support. It's your support that has allowed that to happen and continue to grow our Maine Calling team and grow the shows that we are able to produce.
So show your support for Maine Calling. Show your support for Jen Rooks and the excellent work that she and her colleagues do every single day with this show, whether it's 1 hour, 2 hours, whether you listen live at 11 o'clock or you listen in the evening. This program, this radio station is here for you, and we are asking you to be here for this radio station. 1-800-866-1475. We're going to go back to Maine Calling and Jennifer Rooks here in just a moment. You can go online at mainepublic.org and say thanks with your financial gift. Also making a donation to Maine Community Foundation, donating 33 meals to Good Shepherd Food Bank.
And this is Maine Calling. We've worked out our technical problems. Thank you so much for bearing with us. If you would like to ask a question of our experts about heart health, the Maine Calling phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Of course, you can always send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Mindy Beyer and Dr. Alan Jansiewicz, thank you so much for being with us right now. And sorry for the technical problems. I'm going to start with you, Mindy. Something I found very interesting was the American Heart Association's study about heart risk awareness among women, and especially young women. And some of those results were discouraging. Tell us what the American Heart Association asked during the pandemic and what you found.
Knowing risks around heart disease, and really we found that women are not as well aware as we had originally or has that they had been in the past. So there is some downfall of being aware of women's risk to heart disease.
And Peter, were you surprised to find that? To hear that? Peter, excuse me, Alan Jansiewicz, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Oh, I'm sorry about that. Dr. Alan Janczewicz, I wanted to ask you, what is your experience during this pandemic? Have you found that people are aware of their heart risk? Are they paying attention like they would have been in previous times?
So that's a great question. The early part of this pandemic really, I think, put stress on people, and many people chose not to seek care early on in the pandemic. And so we saw patients presenting later with heart attacks, more complications, more troubles related to their heart attacks than if we had seen them earlier. So I think that the early stage of the pandemic definitely put people into a nervous mode about going to the hospital. I think as things have moved along, things have gotten better, and I think people realize that if they're struggling with symptoms that might be cardiac, we're starting to see them come back to the hospital again. But definitely early on, it was a major issue.
All right. Mindy, let's talk about that. Let's talk about the symptoms. What ought people be paying attention to?
Well, definitely knowing your own body. I mean, when you feel off, it's time to get checked. For women, their symptoms are often a little bit different than men. Men tend to have the more, symptoms that we hear about, tight chest pain, shortness of breath, whereas women may just even feel like they have the flu, have jaw pain, have arm pain. So just really kind of listening to your body, knowing something's off, and going to get help. As the Dr. Janowitz said, people didn't do as well at the beginning of this pandemic to go get help, and that was something we definitely saw. So knowing your body, knowing that something's off, and acting on it.
Dr. Janczewicz, talk to us about what it means to someone to miss a medical appointment because of the pandemic. Why is it so important for you to be able to see your patients despite what's going on?
Yeah, it's a great question. So cardiovascular disease is a lifelong disease. It's not something that you have one day and then you don't have it the next. And so we're biologic systems. Things in our bodies change. And over the course of time, you might need adjustments in your blood pressure meds, your cholesterol meds. You might need a pep talk about, hey, you've gained 10 pounds since last year, and it's probably time to look at some of your own personal habits to see, can you adjust your diet? Can you adjust your exercise schedule? Can you do something to improve your health? And so if patients aren't getting that that attention, that connection, sometimes they can have less good health outcomes.
Mindy, I read that half of all Americans have one of the major risk factors for heart disease: high blood pressure, smoking, high cholesterol. Are those the numbers here in Maine, 1 out of 3?
Oh, I think that I'd have to let the doctor take that
question. Sure.
So I would say that probably our numbers are very close to those numbers or a little higher. Obviously, we have a slightly older population than other parts of the country, and so we do tend to see a fair amount of cardiac risk factors in our patients.
Mm. Mindy Beyer, I understand that you became a cardiac nurse in part because of your own experience as a child. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so I was born with a congenital heart defect, so I literally came out fighting heart disease. When I was born in 1978, my parents were told that if I made it to the age of 3 and lived, that they'd be lucky. I won't lie, I'm 42 now, and I'm thriving, and it's an age that most people wouldn't share publicly, but honestly, I have outlived many of the obstacles. And in doing so, I saw the looks on people's faces when they saw that I had been where their babies were, especially after my first open heart surgery. And I knew I had to do something in cardiology to help others and take my own experiences and really just help people see that their heart disease is a very scary thing, but there are also blessings that come from it, and being able to thrive with a symptom is a wonderful outcome of something that can be so hard to deal with.
And you're not only a cardiac nurse, but also really involved in the American Heart Association. Talk about some of the resources American Heart Association offers to anyone listening right now.
So the American Heart Association really does a great job with education, research, advocacy. Their website is full of information on topics like healthy living, understanding their heart disease. The professionals get help through the Heart Association with guideline-driven therapy. And really, it's a focus on getting CPR and different AEDs, which are automated external defibrillators into communities. It's a great resource, and getting on the website with any questions is a wonderful way to figure out how you can help yourself and utilizing your doctors and healthcare professionals as well.
What are your questions about heart health? Call us at 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief and quick email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Maine Public Radio, and we're here just asking you for a quick moment to support this important service, Maine Calling. I'm Mark Vogelzang, along with Scott Marshallton, with Jen Rooks, and the entire team, to ask you to pledge your support financially with during this Pledge From Home pledge drive. It's a community impact drive, and we have a special reason for giving right now. We've seen tremendous support this morning. 1-800-866-1475. If you're a fan of Maine Calling, let us know, and let us know where you're listening and why you like Maine Calling. MainePublic.org is another number to call, another way to reach us online securely. Again, Scott Marshallton, we've got some great partners lined up, and a wonderful story to tell here on this first day of this pledge drive.
We certainly do, Mark, and I was raising my hand. I'm a huge fan of Maine Calling. My entire family is, and the work that our team puts into each and every show is so critically important. And it's the investments made by you, our listeners,
right,
supporting a show like Maine Calling, supporting Maine Public Radio by calling 1-800-866-1475 or going online at mainepublic.org. Mark, as you mentioned, right now, we're talking a lot about community impact. Every donation that comes into Maine Public right now will incentivize, authorize the Maine Community Foundation to make a gift of 33 meals to the Good Shepherd Food Bank.
Oh,
so every gift to Maine Public right now has a double impact. That means that Maine Community Foundation will give a gift of 33 meals to the Good Shepherd Food Bank to really help the food insecurity in Maine, help address food insecurity in Maine. What a great partnership that we have with them. It's your support that can make that happen.
You know, Scott, it's remarkable to think that a $5 donation or a $25 monthly donation or maybe a $100 a month donation will trigger this amazing response of 33 meals to Good Shepherd Food Bank. We know there are families in need. You mentioned food insecurity during COVID. This has been a remarkably challenging time for families because of job loss and economic challenges. Those of us who have the resources, we're asking you to make a pledge of support and join your friends and neighbors to say, yes, I want to help during this pledge drive to make sure that Good Shepherd has 33 more meals to Good Shepherd, whether you're a new member or an existing member. This is a great way of doing it.
Exactly.
Scott, you want to give that phone number?
Absolutely. You can call 1-800-866-1475 again. 1-800-866-1475 or online at mainepublic.org. Mark, if we could have 2,500 people calling in, sharing their support with Maine Public, that would trigger almost 83,000 meals
to be
shared across our state to help address food insecurity. 83,000 meals. That would go a long way through these winter months. Your support would go a long way also for Maine Public Radio.
Well, You're helping Maine Public and Maine Public Radio, and of course, Maine Calling is what we're tuning in now. We're going to go back in just a second. Let me give you that number again, 1-800-866-1475 or mainepublic.org. You're helping keep this public radio station strong, but you're also helping when you make a contribution to families in need, and your donations matter right now. Thanks very much.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Owl Furniture, made in Maine and committed to designs that support a healthy lifestyle at home or office. OwlFurniture.com.
And welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, what to know about heart disease and what to do to prevent it. My guest, Mindy Beyer, who is a registered nurse and chair of the American Heart Association in Maine, and Dr. Alan Jansiewicz, who is a cardiologist with Northern Light Cardiology at Eastern Maine Medical Center. Join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Dr. Jansiewicz, I want to ask you if there are any new findings in cardiovascular research that are especially exciting or appealing to you and that you'd like to share with our audience.
Sure. So there have been major advances in many aspects of cardiology, whether it's the care of patients with heart attacks acutely or medications. I do a fair amount of work in heart failure, and in the heart failure arena, there's new medications that have been shown to improve survival. These meds were originally used in the diabetic arena, and so an example of one particular med would be Farxiga, and I'm sure some of the listeners out there might be on this particular diabetic med, but this medication also improves survival for people who've had prior heart attack or a weakened heart and have heart failure. And so over the course of time, we keep getting new and better medications to treat our patients. And we're seeing that we turn a disease state like heart failure, where people have shortness of breath and fluid retention and exercise intolerance, we improve their overall lives and improve their survival as well. And so you have meds like Farxiga, but then you also have other cholesterol-lowering meds that will also improve outcomes in cardiovascular patients. So, you know, we've used the statins, which a lot of people know about over the course of time, to reduce risk, but now there's the PCSK9 inhibitors, and there's another new class of meds that are in clinical trials. So, you know, we have many new things that we can do.
And so I'm reading between the lines here, thinking to myself, if somebody feels as though they've struggled with heart disease for a long time, not to feel defeatist, but maybe return to your doctor and talk about some of these new medications that are out there and new ways of treating heart disease.
No question that, you know, over the course of time, we get better and better therapies. And if someone can't tolerate one therapy, well, there's newer things in the pipeline that maybe won't have the same side effects. For instance, a lot of patients on statins get muscle aches, and some people can't tolerate statins due to that issue. And so now there's other classes of meds which can also reduce the risk either of a first heart attack or a subsequent heart attack.
All right. Well, we're going to go to Ann, who's calling in from Westbrook. Hi, Ann. Go ahead.
Hi. Gee, that was very interesting to me, too, because I'm on statins and I'm having muscle aches. So now I have something else to ask my doctor questions about. I'm just going to say something very, very important, and I believe it was mentioned while I wasn't listening to the program, but shortness of breath is, to me, the most important clue I had to that I was going to have a heart attack. And I had shortness of breath, severe shortness of breath, for probably 7 months before I actually had the heart attack, which was in 2017. My primary care physician, because I have a lot of, I don't know what you'd call it, I have a lot of respiratory issues, but they're not severe, he kept giving me a new antibiotic. But what I was really having was problems with the blood, that I was not, with my blood circulating. In other words, the artery that eventually caused my heart attack was already clogged. So the oxygen wasn't getting around my body. And if I climbed, let's say, a flight of stairs like the one in Portland High School, which is a real challenge, I would pass out when I get to the top.
And so, thank you so much for calling in and sharing your story, that the shortness of breath was the only symptom, but that your doctor thought it was related to something else. Dr. Jansiewicz, when you hear this, are you surprised?
Shortness of breath is a very tricky symptom, Jennifer, because it's so many different things can cause it. And so, when you present to the doctor short of breath, the doctor or provider has to sort through things and try to look at your history, look at your symptoms, look at associated symptoms. So what else are you having? And then try to decide, okay, does this sound cardiac or does this sound pulmonary, so related to the lungs? What could this be? And so half the battle for a physician kind of evaluating a patient in this circumstance is to say, okay, could this be the heart? Because we know, as Mindy noted, that you had noted that women don't always present with the same symptoms that men. And in general, not all people are going to present with what we call the same anginal equivalent. So the same symptom that is causing that is being caused by potentially a blockage. And so it doesn't surprise me that it can take a while when someone presents with shortness of breath to get diagnosed. But the hope is that over the course of time, as you know, more and more people become aware of heart disease, aware of the symptoms, that we think about these things sooner.
And Anne, you had a heart attack in 2017. How are you doing today?
I'm fine. I'm having a little problem with this, with keeping my weight down because of COVID, because I just don't get out and I'm not as active as I was. I'm working on that very hard. But I do want to add one other thing. The actual day of my heart attack, the only symptom I had besides shortness of breath was what felt to me exactly like heartburn. Really bad heartburn. I must have eaten a whole bottle of Tums before a friend called me on the phone and said, "What's going on? We didn't see you today." And I said, kept saying, "Oh, I think my stomach's upset." She said, "Why don't you call, you know, for an ambulance?" She said, "I think you're having a heart attack." And she was absolutely right.
Well, thank goodness for your friend. Mindy, as you hear Anne's story, what resonates with you?
That's a great question. It's to advocate for yourself. It really is, as I said earlier, you know your body. And when things are off, often we know. And the problem that I have seen throughout my career is that we don't always listen. I feel like that is, especially for us who are busy people, it's inconvenient to listen to that. So, Anne, good job for your friend kind of calling you to say, you know, listen and call the ambulance, because that is the kind of push that often people need. But it's sometimes sad that we have to have that push in order to get our own care under examined. And when our friends look at us, they can easily say it, but sometimes we can't always do it. So advocating for yourself and really listening to your body are the two things that I would say.
Anne, thank you so much for your call. If you'd like to join the conversation, 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainpublic.org. An email here from Gretchen. I'm wondering what the panelists have learned about the consequences for heart health in the aftermath of being infected with COVID-19. Many people, even after 10 or 11 months, are still struggling with cardiac symptoms. Dr. Jansiewicz, what do we know?
Yeah, so great email question. I just gave a brief presentation to some colleagues about this issue. And so clearly, this virus is a respiratory virus, but it does have effects on the heart. And we know that people who have an associated heart attack with their infection, or at least what we call muscle injury or myocardial injury, so we can measure in their blood some cardiac enzyme that shouldn't be there, we know those people have worse outcome. And so when the virus does affect the heart, we know that people potentially will do a little bit worse. We also know that there's a lot of questions associated with people returning to sports and other activities after they've had the virus. And thankfully, the American College of Cardiology, American Heart Association, as well as some local cardiologists and work groups in this area have kind of created a post-COVID athlete evaluation. So we have guidelines that kind of help us assess our patients, especially those that might be younger, might want to return to sports. But I think the big take-home messages are that, yes, if you get moderately ill with coronavirus and you have evidence of myocardial injury or a mini heart attack in your bloodstream, it is serious. It does suggest that things are a little bit more worrisome for you. But once again, we have good treatments, and most people, thankfully, ultimately do well.
Mm. Mindy, is the American Heart Association doing work on a national scale with COVID and heart disease research?
Yes, they definitely started right away with dedicating a lot of money and time to the COVID-19 pandemic. I don't know the specific numbers off the top of my head, but the work that has been done between when COVID started and now has been pretty substantial through the Heart Association.
All right. Let's step back a little bit here. And for somebody in the audience who's listening to this and thinking, okay, time to start getting serious about this, Mindy, what are some preventative measures people can be taking so that they don't develop heart disease if they don't have it already?
There are some basic ones that really have been really part of the matter, I'll say, for the last forever. And that is to eat a heart-healthy diet, to really kind of look at what you're eating and to eat a lot of vegetables and fiber, kind of keep the color in your diet, as well as making sure that you're getting enough exercise. The Heart Association recommends 150 minutes a week of moderate exercise to keep your heart healthy. And I would say that during the COVID pandemic and all that's going along with it right now, I think that an important thing, and being a survivor and having to kind of isolate more than some other people that may not have a chronic condition, is to make sure that your mental health is in check and that you continue to do the things that are basic and to help you with keeping yourself healthy, knowing your numbers, your cholesterol, your blood pressure, and keeping your weight in a healthy range.
All right. Dr. Janswitz, do you see an age in which people tend to develop heart disease? Is there a sort of a danger zone when people need to really start paying attention, and especially people who haven't been to the doctor in a few years, get yourself there and make sure that everything is okay?
No question that as we age, our risk for heart disease increases. And so, you know, kind of getting back to the ACC and AHA, American Heart Association guidelines, we have a fair amount of data for people who are age 40 to 75, and that's really where this risk assessment can greatly alter someone's course over the course of their life. And so, you know, seeing someone who's 40, looking for the risk factors. Do they have hypertension? Do they have a strong family history of heart disease? Are they a smoker? Do they have obesity or what we call the metabolic syndrome? Do they have any of these things? And if they do, then we can actually calculate their 10-year risk pretty simply. And then there's guidelines that tell us, okay, based upon your 10-year risk, we should potentially initiate lifestyle modification, or we should initiate lipid therapy, so cholesterol-lowering therapy. We should do, you know, we should modulate your blood pressure better, treat hypertension. So those are all things that in that 40-plus range that really become important. Now, just because someone isn't 40 doesn't mean that they can't have heart disease. We do see younger patients sometimes who have multiple risk factors develop very premature heart disease. And so I would say, yes, age matters. And as you age, you are at greater risk for developing heart disease, but risk factors matter as well.
All right. Well, the phone number to ask our experts a question about heart health, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Also, we'd love to hear your story. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at MaineCalling, or post a comment to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Eastern Basements, a division of Maine-owned Eastern Mold Remediation, offering crawl space repairs and waterproofing. EasternBasements.com.
You're listening to Maine Public Radio, and good morning. I'm Mark Vogelsang, along with Scott Marshallton and our team here, including Jen Rooks and all of us, encouraging you to do one thing this morning. It's our Pledge from Home Community Impact Drive today, and we're asking you to make a financial contribution to Maine Public at 1-800-866-1475 or online at mainepublic.org. There's something really important that's at play right now and that's at stake. And Scott, I hope you tell our friends about it. And we want to say thank you for making these gifts today.
I'd be pleased to, Mark. And thanks to all of our donors that have called in thus far supporting Maine Public Radio. Every donor that called in, your gift to Maine Public triggered a gift of 33 meals. Wow. That would be given from the Maine Community Foundation to the Good Shepherd Food Bank. So again, every gift that's made during this pledge drive to Maine Public, regardless of the size, although we hope you're generous, every gift will trigger a gift from the Maine Community Foundation of 33 meals to the Good Shepherd Food Bank, supporting food insecurity in Maine. So you're not only supporting Maine Public Radio, you're not only supporting your community of public broadcast listeners and viewers, you're also supporting food insecurity. What a wonderful way of sharing support and really making the impact felt across our state.
Scott, you know, there are thousands of families who are in need right now through no fault of their own in
right.
Communities across Maine, large and small, urban and rural, north to south, east to west. And this issue, this very pernicious issue of food insecurity, has only gotten worse during the COVID pandemic. And this is an opportunity for the folks at Community Foundation and Good Shepherd Food Bank and Maine Public teaming up to say, we would love to help make a difference in Maine. And when you make a $5 gift, or a $50 gift, or a $75 or $150 a month gift, it matters, and more people will have access to meals thanks to this effort by the Good Shepherd Food Bank. Here's the number to call, 1-800-866-1475. We're going to go back to the program in just a moment with Maine Calling. But what you're also doing here is, of course, helping Maine Public Radio provide this valuable community service with trusted in-depth conversations like the one we're having about heart disease and on the issues that impact our lives. So do your part and be generous when you call right now.
Invest in Maine Public Radio by calling 1-800-866-1475. Mark, Maine Calling is a perfect example of what we do in public broadcasting to bring communities together, to create a dialogue, to educate ourselves, educate our neighbors on important topics. Today's topic, heart health, extremely important, especially during this pandemic. As we've heard, many folks are struggling to get the regular exercise that they would. And here and now at Maine Public Radio, Maine Calling, your support allows us to do these types of shows, 1-800-866-1475 or online at mainepublic.org. Again, 1-800-866-1475 and online at Maine Public. And
thanks.
Be generous. Thanks.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, what to know about heart disease and what to do to prevent it. My guest, Mindy Beyer, who is a registered nurse and chair of the American Heart Association in Maine, and Dr. Alan Jansiewicz, who is a cardiologist with Northern Light Cardiology at Eastern Maine Medical Center. You can join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll go to Bar Harbor and Michael. Hi, Michael. Go ahead.
Oh, hi. I'm actually on I-95 heading south to Portland, but I had a double bypass surgery on August the 10th up in Bangor, and I just want to really thank all the people in that whole field for all the work that they do. They saved my life, and I was light flighted up from Bar Harbor, and I just got a chance to see real professionalism. And even during the COVID period, it was I felt very safe. So anybody that's dealing with these things, Bangor is an amazing place to have that work done.
Michael, thanks for your call. Dr. Jansiewicz, comments?
That's really kind, Michael, and we really enjoy hearing from patients who've had a good experience and a good outcome. Essentially, our goal in this region is to take care of all of our patients and make sure they get the care that they need. And so when someone presents with a heart attack anywhere in our region, we have systems to get those patients that require more advanced care to Eastern Maine Medical Center, where we can offer them, emergency cardiac catheterization, bypass surgery, stenting, et cetera. So when you're having a heart attack like Michael did, or you're having a serious cardiac presentation, then we can offer, life-saving treatments in those cases.
Michael, thanks so much for your call. Email question from Anne. What is the relationship between alcohol consumption in women and heart health? Mindy.
Oh, Dr. Jansiewicz, can you take that one?
Okay, that's fine, yeah.
Yes, certainly. So alcohol consumption is a tricky one. And so the data for alcohol is that large doses of alcohol are harmful. And so if women are drinking roughly more than one drink per day, or men drinking more than two drinks per day, that's thought to be excessive. And over the course of time, there's been this association between red wine and is that a healthier form of alcohol, et cetera. What I always tell people is, if you're not a drinker to begin with, don't start drinking. If you do drink, drink in moderation and follow those type of guidelines.
All right. We'll go to Tom, who's calling from Stetson. Hi, Tom. Go ahead.
All righty. I had a question. I'm not looking for a diagnosis. It's about my wife, 69-year-old female, diagnosed with moderate to severe calcification. This has never been looked at by a doctor, only an NPA. Is there anything that a doctor could look at and make any judgments on without a physical, physically showing up in the office?
Jennifer, is it okay if I ask?
Yeah, go right ahead.
Yep,
jump
perfect.
In.
So thank you so much for calling. So moderate to severe calcification, there can be a few things that calcify in the vascular system. So moderate to severe calcification can be of the blood vessels, so calcific atherosclerosis, or where you get plaque that over the course of time, the body calcifies that, and that can be, that's plaque in your heart arteries, plaque in the arteries to your brain, so in your neck. It can be plaque in the arteries to your legs, or even your intestinal, your abdominal organs. And so that's one of the ways that calcific plaque shows up. Another one is our valves can potentially calcify. So people get calcific aortic stenosis, or the aortic valve becomes thickened and stenotic or doesn't open as well, and that puts a strain on the heart. So I'm guessing in her case, someone told her she has probably calcific atherosclerosis. Does that sound right?
Yeah, that sounds accurate. And that was the end. She also has an abdominal, you know, connection with it too. And that was the end of it. The NPA just said, well, don't worry about it. And, you know, we attempted to get, you know, a cardiologist to look at it. And I don't know if that's a reasonable request or if it requires a physical visit to the office.
It's a reasonable request, and so in general, you know, if someone has calcific atherosclerosis, we want to make sure that we're treating them appropriately. So we want to make sure they're on an aspirin if they don't have a significant bleeding risk. We want to make sure they're on typically a statin, a cholesterol lowering medication, to not only lower their cholesterol but to stabilize that plaque and reduce their risk of future cardiac events. That's called secondary prevention as opposed to primary prevention of heart disease. And so there's definitely things that we'd want to do. In terms of seeing a cardiologist, in general, for first visits, the first visits tend to be in person, even in COVID times. But I have seen an occasional patient for a first visit via telemedicine, via Zoom. Yesterday during the snowstorm, I did that. So it sometimes is possible, but in general, it sounds like she's a good candidate to potentially be referred to a cardiologist for an in-office visit. In-office visits have been very safe. You know, there have been some instances, across the state where we have had some outbreaks within the healthcare system, but in general, those outbreaks have not been large, and all the precautions we're taking, from screening patients to screening ourselves, the employees and staff and physicians, to getting vaccinated, all these pieces are making care safe. And so I would say in her case, she should probably see one of us for an evaluation.
Tom, thank you for your call and good luck to your wife. I'm going to go to an email from James. James says, I'm taking statins for high cholesterol. My blood pressure's okay. I've never been checked for clogged arteries. If my arteries were clogged prior to starting on statins, will the clogging go away over time while taking the statins? I've heard from family members about an MRI, I think, analysis of the arteries that can show if any are clogged. Is this procedure recommended to determine if arteries are clogged? I have family members who didn't find out about their clogged arteries until after they had a heart attack. Dr. Janswitz.
What a great question. So my sense is, in this case, the physician or provider taking care of this patient looked probably at cardiovascular risk assessment, and the data suggested that over the next 10 years, he had a risk of over 7.5% to potentially higher for a cardiovascular event, and so and had elevated cholesterol, and so was started on a statin for primary prevention, so to prevent a first cardiac event. But do we know whether or not he has established heart disease? And so the answer from what I'm hearing there is we don't. And so sometimes we can do studies such as a coronary CT or a cardiac CT scan, if you will, looking for coronary calcium. We just talked about calcific atherosclerosis. And so a quick study is a CT for coronary calcium, and that can help us further decide how important statin therapy is if there's a patient who's having either side effects or is hesitant to take a statin. If you have some risk and then you get a CT like this and find that, well, I do have a little bit of calcific atherosclerosis in my coronary arteries, well, then that is an impetus to potentially take that statin medication to reduce your risk of a heart attack.
All right. Well, we're going to go to Paula calling from Morrill. Hi, Paula. Go ahead.
Oh, good morning. Yes, I don't have a question. I just wanted to add something to what's been said.
I used to have a practice in the art of ancient art of Jinshin Jitsu. That's J-I-N-S-H-I-N-J-Y-U-T-S-U. And in that art, it comes from the East originally. I wanted to mention that you can people, if they feel something coming on, they can hold their left wrist with their right hand. And also their pinky finger is part of the heart flow as well. So these are techniques that you can do yourself, on yourself. I recovered from numerous illnesses with this art as well. So
Paul, are you saying you can tell that something's going wrong with your wrist, or are you saying that you can stop it from happening?
I'm saying that the energy in the East, it's different. It's a different form of medicine where, blockages happen and you can help release it yourself. So you would be holding that area to help release the energy that's stuck in your heart function area.
Okay. Paula, thank you so much for your call. Dr. Janswitz, I'm going to let you respond. We are running tight on time, so go ahead.
Sure, I'll try to be quick. So I unfortunately don't know too much about alternative medicine, but clearly there are multiple different ways to approach problems, and I never discount other therapies that I don't know as much about until I've studied them. What I would say is that a lot of the standard therapies, including, exercise, diet, weight loss, so non-pharmacologic therapies, have been proven to provide significant benefit to patients. So what I can comment on is really the standard therapies, and I encourage people to get to their ideal body weight, to exercise, to take care of themselves, to drink in moderation, and lastly, to continue practicing social distancing, et cetera, during this pandemic, and to, when it's their turn, when they if they're the right age, et cetera, to definitely consider getting the vaccine. I've had both doses, and I did fine with it, and I herd immunity is going to be very important for us, and it will protect our hearts as well.
Well, thank you so much for your call, Paul, and thank you for both of our guests today for coming on to this program, and I apologize for the technical difficulty at the beginning. The voice you just heard, Alan Janswitz, a non-invasive cardiologist with Eastern Maine Medical Center. Also here, Mindy Beyer. She represented the American Heart Association. Today's sound engineer was George Thomas. We had help from John Keimel and John Bradford. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, we talk with Maine teachers about how they are faring during these challenging times. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you have been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.